Good morning. Well, it's good afternoon, isn't it? It isn't good morning, it's good afternoon. Later than advertised Sunday View. It's 12 noon UK time as I speak with you now. It's a glorious day in Manchester. The sun is shining. It's wonderful. I hope you're well and I hope you've had a good weekend. My name is Richie Allen. The Twitter is open right now. If you want to tweet me on anything that I'm discussing over the next hour or something completely different, tweet at Richie Allen Show now. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk too. Looking forward to hearing from you. I really am. This Sunday View. We're live and I'm happy about that. Back. Let's crack on with it.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Welcome to it. And I'm not in the best of health today. I've had a pretty difficult day yesterday. Sometime late yesterday afternoon, early evening, began to feel unwell and progressively unwell. And overnight, I've had a dreadful night. I've had the whole vomiting, diarrhea thing. And the last I remember was just after 4 a.m. Coming back to bed for like the 17th time. If you're eating something, I don't want to be putting you off, whatever that is. But I've had a rotten old night. If it can't pin down what it is, I feel better today. I got up about 7:30 and I went back to bed for a bit. Then I got up at 9 and I feel better. I don't feel queasy anymore. Whatever it was dreadful. And hence, that's why I'm late. The programme should be on at 11 a.m. That's UK time, BST. But we're a bit late. But better late than never. Better late than never. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're broadcasting live on davidicke.com, on Fab Radio 2, as well as TuneIn Radio and my own website, richieallen.co.uk. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Keep that handy. As always, the information, the subjects I'll be talking about today on this programme, covered in great detail on davidicke.com. Good stuff. Heard from David this morning, working hard, extremely hard, on his forthcoming book, which I think is scheduled for a release later on this year, maybe late summer, early autumn. But don't quote me on that. So he's working away on that in between the worldwide wake-up tour as well. Right, so we're going to crack on with it then. It's going to be a long show today. I think I have a lot to talk about, a lot of things that you need to hear. Let's have a look at the papers then. That's what we do. We're going to have a look at the broadsheet and tabloid newspapers and the front pages of those papers, and then we'll crack on. Now, the Sunday Times front page today, the headline is Brexit Brings Bonanza for Billionaires. Lovely alliteration there. Brexit brings bonanza for billionaires. So the Sunday Times leads with its 2017 rich list. It includes people like Adele, for the first time, the singer Adele. The paper says, the Sunday Times, that Brexit has fueled an explosion of wealth among some of the newer entrants. Why? Because they have apparently benefited from a boom in the value of their overseas investments. That's in the Sunday Times today, Rupert Murdoch's Sunday Times. Now, also on the front page of the Sunday Times is Labour tax rise to hit earners on £80,000. That's a story on the front page as well. More on that shortly. That seems to be the biggest story today, the one covered by the entire mainstream media, giving huge coverage to this. A tax pledge made by the Labour Party ahead of the election on June 8th. Labour tax rise to hit earners on £80,000 or above. The Sunday Observer, same story. Not same headline, but similar headline. The Observer will fund spending by raising tax on £80,000 earners, says Labour. That's the Sunday Observer. The Sunday Telegraph, the headline on the Sunday Telegraph, different slant on the same story. The Sunday Telegraph saying Labour tax to hammer workers on £80,000, taking a negative spin on the story. Now, the Sunday Telegraph front page also carrying the story that alleges emails belonging to Emmanuel Macron were hacked by Russia. Maybe more on that a bit later on. You'll know that Frenchmen and women are going to the polls right now to choose between Marine Le Pen, National Front, and the centrist Emmanuel Macron. Now, the BBC are reporting, just as I was coming on air to chat with you, that the turnout was 28% by noon, which was lower than that of previous presidential elections. So by noon, 28% turnout, they're saying. 50,000 police officers have been deployed to maintain security. The French are getting very used to seeing police decked out from head to toe in military equipment with very scary guns. That's what's going on. The BBC says the vote is being watched closely as the results could affect the future of the EU. That's the French election today. I won't bore you by telling you what you already know. There's no choice for the French, no more than there was choice for the Americans in November, no more than there's any real choice here either. It doesn't matter who gets in. It doesn't matter. But that's the French election. I can't tell you more about that. We might touch on the allegations again made against Russia, that Russia hacked the email account or email accounts associated with Emmanuel Macron. That's all over the news as well, but not getting so much coverage today as it did yesterday. For more on all of that, davidicke.com/headlines. So the French are out and about then, but not in great numbers. You see the apathy that's out there. Well, why wouldn't there be apathy? The Sunday Express leads with May's June Revolution. Front page, May's June Revolution. The Express reports that the Conservative Party will turbocharge social mobility ahead of the general election, including plans to run 7-day GP surgeries and to create more grammar school places as well. Yeah. That's a lie. The Sunday Mail front, the front page of the Sunday Mail moves away from the UK election and concentrates on the royal family. And there's a BBC drama going to broadcast real soon, maybe even this coming week. The drama, I believe, is based on a play. What is the headline in the Sunday Mail today? It's a strong one. Fury over BBC paternity slur against Harry is the headline in the Sunday Mail. Fury over BBC paternity slur against Harry. So you know what that means. It's all about Major James Hewitt. I'm going to read you some of the story. The BBC was last night accused of inflicting deliberate pain on Prince Harry by dredging up an unfounded slur that he isn't Prince Charles's son. The outrageous and discredited insinuation that Princess Diana's lover James Hewitt is his father is repeated in the controversial BBC Two drama King Charles III, which will be screened this week. Yes, it is this week. The timing is especially cruel so close to the 20th anniversary of Diana's death, and those close to the royal family say the hurtful claims should never have been included in the BBC programme. Diana's closest confidant, somebody called Rosa Monckton, said the BBC is deliberately causing pain to a real living person in a salacious fashion. Harry was 12 when his mother died, and she is no longer around to reassure him. I don't think this is why millions pay their licence fee. The Sunday Mail writes, former cavalry officer Hewitt has point-blank rejected the rumours, which greatly angered Diana herself, according to her former bodyguard Ken Wharf. And basically the Mail then quotes a number of different sources to say that this is all nonsense. The hurtful Harry Hewitt rumour, which has surfaced frequently, is based on little more than the fact that both men have red hair. But it is also a trait of the Spencers, Diana's family. The Mail continues, the slur has been comprehensively dismissed by royal watchers as nonsense. It is well documented that Diana did not meet the former lifeguards officer, Hewitt, until 2 years after Harry's birth in September 1984. However, Hewitt has actually, I'm obviously not reading from the Mail now, Hewitt has actually said on a couple of occasions that he was seeing Diana prior to the conception of and the birth of Prince Harry. And this is where there's a lot of suspicion, you see. I believe. Anyway, the truth is I don't know. Hewitt was mentioned in dispatches when he commanded a Challenger tank in the 1991 Gulf War. He had an affair with Diana between 86 and 91. But as I said, Hewitt has given the impression in some interviews that the affair began a bit earlier. And Harry looks nothing like his father, does he? Nothing like him. And it must be said, nor does he resemble any of her family, if you look closely at the pictures of the male members of her family. No real resemblance. But what the hell do I know? That's the Sunday Mail today. Now, the Sunday Mirror, which is a Labour supporter, turns its fire on some of the key figures in the party, saying they've gone absent without leave. They've named Tom Watson, deputy leader, Ed Miliband, Yvette Cooper, arguing that these hugely talented politicians, they must be joking, have abandoned Jeremy Corbyn and could do much more to bolster Labour's campaign. The Sunday Mirror says they could be the recruiting sergeants that Labour needs to bring wavering voters back to the party. That's in the Sunday Mirror. Now, the Sun on Sunday focuses on defence with a blistering attack on Jeremy Corbyn. The Sun on Sunday's editorial accuses Corbyn of having, quote, spent his career allying with our enemies and doing everything he can to undermine our safety, end quote. They say, and I quote, Corbyn spent his career allying with our enemies and doing everything he can to undermine our safety, end quote. That's the Sun on Sunday's editorial, basically. The Sun backs Theresa May. I'm going to read you a couple of lines from the editorial. This is the direct quote. But with Labour now in the hands of the hard left, it's not even fit to be the opposition, let alone the government. Theresa May understands the most basic point of being Prime Minister, that your first duty is to protect the country. But Jeremy Corbyn doesn't even think we should have a nuclear deterrent, leaving us open to blackmail by Vladimir Putin and any other tyrant with a weapon. He has spent his career allying with our enemies and doing everything he can to undermine our safety, says the Sun on Sunday. They also say it's not just Corbyn. His closest ally, IRA supporter John McDonnell, was pictured on May Day speaking underneath the communist hammer and sickle alongside the party flag of Syrian butcher Bashar al-Assad. That just about sums him up, writes the Sun on Sunday. Now, I've been a journalist for a long time. I'm a real journalist. Not bragging. Unlike many of my contemporaries in the broadcast independent media, I've been through the mainstream school. And I'm going to say the Sun on Sunday editorial is libelous. That is libelous. To suggest that Corbyn is doing everything he can to undermine our safety is libelous. Now, I doubt very much Corbyn is going to instruct a solicitor to write to the Sun on Sunday, but it is libelous. It's untrue. And it's a very harmful statement to make about any politician or any person. Doesn't matter that it's garbage. Doesn't matter that it's the gutter press at its worst. Some people will say, well, you know, who pays attention to it? But plenty of people do pay attention to it. It's a serious accusation. They've basically accused him of being a traitor and a criminal to say that he's doing everything he can to undermine the safety of British people. That's the Sun on Sunday today. I wonder, will Jeremy Corbyn have a serious think after the election about going after the Sun? We'll see. Now to the £80,000 story. Anyone earning under that, most of us, we can only dream about earning £80,000 a year. Most of us won't be taxed. If you're earning under £80,000, you will not be taxed anymore. That's according to John McDonnell, the Shadow Chancellor. Now, he was on the Andrew Marr BBC One political programme today, and he was asked, of course, he was asked about that pledge by the Labour Party. This is what he had to say.
Your message today is that if you earn £80,000 or more a year, you'll be paying more in tax, but if you don't, you'll be paying no more.
But what we're saying today, anyone earning below £80,000 will be guaranteeing you will not have an increase in income tax or VAT or national insurance contributions. And for those above £80,000, we're asking them to pay a modest bit more. Why? To fund our public services. You had Theresa May on last week, Andrew. If I just make this point, You put that very good question to her about nurses. 11% cut in wages over the last 7 years. Some of them having to go to food banks. Our nurses, that cannot be right. So we're going to ask those higher earners just to pay a bit more.
Are we talking about a new rate of tax? Because the 45p rate and then the 50p rate, okay, possibly on the Labour.
What will happen over this next week is that Labour Party, the Democratic Party, will be consolidating and confirming our manifesto. We'll launch it the week after next, and then we'll identify the very specifics of this. But I wanted people to...
But you've said very clearly that people over £80,000 a year will be paying more.
A bit more, a modest bit more. Well, let me say this. The reason I'm saying this, because I want middle and lower earners to be assured that under Labour they will not be paying more taxes, because I've seen some of these ludicrous figures that the Tories have been bandying about, and I wanted them to have that assurance.
More details on this, says McDonnell, when the manifesto was published, maybe later in the week. So that's what he said about the £80,000. Now, he then took the opportunity to have a go again at the way the media has covered Labour, the way the media has covered Jeremy Corbyn and Labour's policies. This is interesting. You remember he had a pop at the media on Sky News after the local election results on Thursday, which were devastating, on Friday, I should say, which were devastating for Labour. But he's at this again. The media portrayal of Labour is hurting the party, says McDonnell.
Well, I think we've got a period of time now in which I think we've not been able to get our policies across. Partly that's the media, I have to say. I have to be straight about that. But also, we are campaigning as also now, I think, with a united party, our campaigning has got to step up a notch. So, you know, the general election starts now. Local government elections are over. Now it's the general election. In broadcasting terms, we get more balanced coverage in terms of a general election campaign. It gives us the opportunity to put our ideas across. And also, it gives the opportunity to people to learn more about Jeremy Corbyn as our leader as well.
And you think the more they see him, the more they'll like him? Because that is not the evidence so far.
Well, I think it's important in a general election, in a democracy like this, it's important you put your policies out there straightforwardly, but also you show what type of person you are. That's why I want this debate between Jeremy and Theresa May, and I don't understand why she's running from it. If we can have a debate in France between the two leaders for the presidency, that's standing today, why can't we here? And I think if they do see more of Jeremy, they'll see the honest and decent person that
shouldn't
he is, but also the strength he has.
Shouldn't he do a debate with the other leaders in that case?
Well, we'll see. I think it's important that Theresa May...
So he might.
Well, let's see. I want Theresa May to respond to this, because the reality is, whoever's going to be Prime Minister of this country after June the 8th, it's either going to be Jeremy Corbyn or Theresa May. It's going to be one of the two major parties. We need her to actually say, look, I will debate this. What is wrong with that? Why? We're a democracy, for goodness sake.
Well, we're not a democracy. And I was thinking about this today, and I know it's a cheap point to make and a cheap point to score, but we are not a democracy. We are not. Because I know from my time living in the UK, and I've lived here two or three different times over the course of my adult life, that the majority of people here do not want us invading a sovereign country, do not want us raining bombs down on Damascus or anywhere else. The majority of us want a free NHS forever, forever. The majority of us want massive corporations to pay their taxes to fund public services. I could go on and on and on. There's no democracy here. Millions marched in 2003 before the illegal invasion of Iraq. There's no democracy. None. Now, I'll tell you what's interesting about what McDonnell said about the media. And we love talking about the media, don't we? You and I. On the same show, the Andrew Marr Show today, as part of the newspaper review segment, which usually opens the programme, the political editor of BuzzFeed, a man called Jim Waterson, talked about the kind of conversations taking place on Facebook when it comes to the UK general election. Now, BuzzFeed's Jim Waterson told the BBC this morning that there's a glaring contrast. He said the right-wing media portrays Corbyn in a starkly different way than Corbyn is portrayed on Facebook and on social media. This is really interesting. Listen carefully.
Yeah, so at BuzzFeed, we spend a lot of time trying to work out how technology is changing politics and the effect that it's having. And what we've done for this election is looked at made a social barometer, which is an attempt to see what people on Facebook, which is used by the majority of UK adults, are actually sharing about the election. And the end result is a very different narrative to the one that we see from newspapers, which overwhelmingly in this country lean to the right. It's a world where Jeremy Corbyn is doing far better than expected. It's a world where these are the evil Tory policies that the government is pushing on people. It's a world where that sort of story goes viral. But the most interesting thing is that alternative sites, sites with names such as the Canary, sites with names such as Evolve Politics, Squawkbox, are starting to reach and go viral as much as mainstream media outlets.
And this allows people who have no media background particularly, I think there's a teacher in the North, for instance, who has huge coverage.
One of the more popular blogs, which has had one post this week, which has reached maybe over a million people, which is comparable to the circulation of, say, a newspaper, is a guy who runs a blog called Another Angry Voice. And this stuff is going properly viral online. Now, in the same way that Donald Trump, during his rise in the US presidential election, needed his own media, he saw a new sort of media rise up for it. This is what's happening in this election. I'm not saying that this is going to win over voters. I'm not saying this is going to make a massive difference. This is Jeremy Corbyn supporters who feel they're not represented by the rest of the media, choosing in large numbers to go and look for news elsewhere.
What was very interesting about that was Andrew Marr at no time argued with the guy Jim Waters, and he didn't defend the BBC. Waters instead, look, the media is right wing. You know, it's conservative. It's in favour of conservative policies and conservative ideas, basically. And Marr didn't argue with him. But he did take pains to say, however well Jeremy Corbyn does on social media, it might not be reflected in the outcome of the general election. And he mentioned, you know, online newspapers like the Canary, which I've seen a couple of times. I've seen, in fact, about 18 months ago, I interviewed a woman called Kerry-Anne Mendoza on the Nightly programme. And I found her way, way off the pace, to be honest, in terms of having any real grasp or understanding of what's really going on. I think things like the Canary, they're basically extremely mainstream light. They're mainstream light. And ever increasingly, they're descending into clickbait. You know, if you see a Canary article, not just the Canary, but some of the other ones he mentioned, when you see them online, they're obviously very, very heavily slanted towards socialism and towards the Labour Party. And quite often the text doesn't support the headline that you see on Facebook. So I wouldn't get too excited about the Canary and some of these online Facebook shared articles and these online e-zines or magazines that support Corbyn. I wouldn't get too excited about that. Right, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to talk about Jeremy Hunt, the Health Secretary. Before we do that, though, I want to say hello to a few people. Good morning, Paul Curtis. How you doing, Paul? Thanks for listening to the programme. To Karen Kelly as well, to Sugar Dust. I love these names. To Gail, to Jamie. Let me scroll up. To Tiger Johnson. Tiger, good morning. Pater McFadden in Donegal. Good morning, Pater. Lovely to hear from you today. To Jackie in Oz, who's listening in New South Wales, Australia. Jackie, good morning. Well, good evening to you. I hope you've had a good weekend, Jackie. I want to say hi to Liz Jones as well. Wanted to know what the intro music to the programme is. We come in with Brian Eno's An Ending Ascent, which is an Eno tune. And the actual theme song is Shipping Up to Boston by the Dropkick Murphys. Hi to Paul Burchell as well, to David Kona. To Catherine, good morning, Catherine. To Luga, to Bristol Bean, thanks for buying the mug, Bristol. Really appreciate that. To Terry as well, LBC. Sean McDonald, good morning, Sean. Coventry Soul. To Rich Mortimer, David Mortimer, Alan Bristow. Welcome to the programme. So many comments, I'm not going to get the chance to go through them. To basically interact with other people, go to Richie Allen Show on Twitter. In fact, go to Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word in, and you'll see what other people are tweeting to me. Very quick break, back in a minute.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not being seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffickers, please stop! crypto. Available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back, welcome back. Sunday morning, I didn't give you the date. It's the 7th of May 2017. My name is Richie Allen. This is Richie. It isn't Richie, it's Sunday View. In association with davidicke.com, I'm live from Manchester right now. Very warm and very sunny Manchester. It's always great to be with you. Thanks for listening and thank you so much for the tweets. Let's move on. Also on the Andrew Marr BBC One programme today was the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt. Don't get me started on Hunt. An unashamed Rothschild Zionist, Hunt is owned lock, stock and barrel by News Corp's Rupert Murdoch. He really is. Hunt was given the job by David Cameron some years ago when he was Culture Secretary of ensuring that Murdoch's company News Corp got to buy the entire shareholding of B Sky B. That was mendacity, that was criminality on an unimaginable scale, and Hunt got away with it. Now his job is to sell you and sell me on the privatisation of the National Health Service. So Andrew Marr, the presenter, paints a very bleak picture of the state of the service. Then you will hear Hunt.
But here is the Royal College of Physicians saying our NHS is underfunded, underdoctored and overstretched. Patients are waiting longer on lists, on trolleys, in emergency departments and in their homes for the care they need. An increasing number of people, although clinically ready to go home, cannot safely leave hospital as the care system is unable to cope. People's lives are being put at risk. That's the Royal College of Physicians, that's not the BBC or anybody else. It's a very, very serious assessment of where the NHS is under Jeremy Hunt.
And what has Jeremy Hunt and what has this government been doing about that? Because I agree we need more doctors, and since I've been Health Secretary, we've actually got 6,500 more doctors. We've got 15,000 more nurses. And on the funding issue, I think this is the really crucial...
This is what I want to come to, absolutely.
Yeah, OK, well, let's talk about that for a moment. So we did have a very difficult period straight after 2010, after the financial collapse, we had the austerity period. But then towards the end of that period, as soon as we were able to, as Conservatives, because we are absolutely committed to the NHS, we want to be the party of the NHS. Since over the last 3 years, we're putting in an extra £6.5 billion a year. And the result of that is you're seeing an NHS which has got more funding, more doctors, more nurses.
But I put it to you, not enough. I mean, you've got a real problem of pay in the NHS. Nurses who have had 7 years of pay freeze. I put it to the Prime Minister, the Royal College of Nursing says that nurses are having to go to food banks at the moment. And she said there were complex reasons why people go to food banks. Are there complex reasons why nurses have to go to food banks?
Well, let's look at the facts. The minimum a nurse can be paid in this country is £22,000, £27,000 in inner London. That assumes they do no night shifts or antisocial hours, which in practice most of them will. The average pay for nurses is £31,000, which is more than
by 11% in real terms.
Well, we don't agree with those numbers, but that's still they're getting paid more than the national average.
He wouldn't answer the question. Marr didn't press him on it. Nurses and food banks. In fact, you're going to be stunned, dear listener, but if you don't believe me, the entire interview is now available on the BBC News YouTube channel, just in case you think I'm making it up as I go along, which I'm not. You're not going to believe this, but brace yourself now. Hold on to your seat, your chair. Grab the edges of the bed if you're listening in bed. Andrew Marr did not ask Jeremy Hunt about plans to privatise some of the NHS. Right? Now, I know you think this is very preachy, and I know you think it's very soapbox-like when I do this, when I talk about the media and I criticise, you know, very wealthy, very established media presenters like Andrew Marr. And it comes across as maybe a bit petty, it might come across as a bit childish. Some people have even said to me before, it sounds very envious, Richie. It isn't envious. This guy is not fit for purpose. How can you interview Jeremy Hunt about the National Health Service weeks before a general election and not ask him about privatising the NHS? Marr is useless. And I keep telling you this every Sunday, don't I? And you're tired of it. So Jeremy Hunt then says the NHS future lies in the outcome of the Brexit negotiations. Again, I'm not making this up. Hunt says the future of the NHS is dependent on the outcome of the Brexit negotiations. Once again, Andrew Marr doesn't challenge this either and press for any detail, any explanation. None whatsoever. Have a listen if you don't believe me.
If we get a bad Brexit outcome, that would be a disaster for the NHS. And the choice that people face is, do they want a strong Theresa May doing those very difficult negotiations? We've got 27 countries lined up against us. Some of them appear to think that for the EU to survive, Britain must fail. And we need a strong Prime Minister. Or do we want Jeremy Corbyn, who can't even get his own party to agree on Brexit?
Let me interrogate that a little bit. In terms of the good deal that you say this country must have for the NHS to thrive, presumably that does not include no deal. Would no deal damage the NHS?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable that Marr hasn't said to him, explain the relationship between the state of the NHS, how the NHS functions with a good outcome for Brexit. No, he doesn't. He goes straight into this, well, is a bad deal, is a good deal, is no deal better than a bad deal? Garbage. Is no deal better than a bad deal? Doesn't ask him to explain why the NHS would be dependent on a good outcome in the negotiations.
The NHS badly.
Well, we've been very clear that no deal is better than a bad deal.
And I'm asking you whether no deal, leaving without an agreement, would damage the NHS in your view.
Well, we want a deal. We think a deal.
Question.
Well, no. Let me answer very directly. We think a deal, getting a good deal, would be better for the NHS, better for the economy, better for jobs, better for all of us. But we also recognise that a bad deal would be bad for the country, bad for our long-term future, and we're not prepared to say that we will get a deal at any cost.
Hi, Marr obsessed on is no deal better than a bad deal. Wouldn't nail Hunt to the wall to get him to explain why the EU deal would affect the funding of the NHS. Do you know why that is? Because the NHS is to be privatised. We're seeing it all the time. Anybody who's been attending talks by David Icke or reading his books for 25 years, it's all laid out for you. The language they use, people are living too long. They're living too long. People need to understand the times are different now than when the NHS was set up. People will have to consider paying for some services. Some non-essential services, they say. But they won't tell you or even attempt to define what non-essential is. Sickening. Glaring, staring you in the face. The ineptitude of the British media. And some of you are pointing out there on Twitter right now. Rich Mortimer pointing out, I can't believe I pay for that. Jeremy Hunt was surprised how easy Marr was taking it on him. What a result. Marr should be sacked. Can't believe I paid for it. And in the very same programme, remember, I have no time for Labour, I have no time for Corbyn or McDonnell, but in the same programme, he repeatedly asked John McDonnell, are you a Marxist? Are you a Marxist? I could have dug the clip out, but I didn't want to play it because we don't have all day. So again, the differentiation between the treatment of Jeremy Hunt, the Murdoch Rothschild owned, I'm not going to finish that sentence, it'll get me into trouble. Lies through his teeth, plans to privatise the NHS, make it inaccessible to some people. A lot of people. And on the same programme, John McDonnell is asked repeatedly, are you a Marxist? Are you a Marxist? Well, what about asking Jeremy Hunt, are you a fascist? Are you a fascist, Health Secretary? Are you a fascist? You think it's okay that nurses can't afford to shop for themselves? Do they have to go to food banks? You think it's okay to privatise every state asset in this country? Are you a fascist, Jeremy? He wouldn't dare, would he? He wouldn't dare. Shocking stuff, this. And this is why I dwell on it. Because I know there are people listening to this programme all the time. New listeners coming in, disaffected, disenfranchised, listening to this programme and programmes like it. So look at what's going on in front of your eyes on your TV screens. And again, the clip with John McDonnell being interviewed by Andrew Marr is on YouTube, BBC News YouTube channel, BBC News on YouTube. Look at the entire interview. In the last 5 minutes, he repeatedly asks John McDonnell, is he a Marxist? Wonderful stuff. Finally, Jeremy Hunt was asked about the EU trying to interfere in the election. What would he say about that? Jeremy Hunt on EU interference in the UK election.
She said that they were deliberately interfering in this country's election to produce a... Presumably what you think is that they're interfering to help Jeremy Corbyn against the Prime Minister. Is that the allegation?
Well, I think, you know, they didn't have to leak these reports to newspapers of dinners that happened in the middle of an election campaign.
Sure. Why did they do it?
Well, it is the wrong approach to negotiations. We want good negotiations. We want a good outcome.
The Prime Minister said this was about trying to fix our election. And I'm just asking you, how are they trying to fix our election and in whose favour?
Well, you know, you'll have to ask them why they chose to do that. But I think the answer is very clear, that they are trying to leak reports that undermine Theresa May's position. And I think what the British people know...
So they're trying to damage the Conservatives in this election?
I think what the British people know is it is for them to decide on this, not for people from other countries.
Are they trying to damage the Conservatives in this election, in your view?
Well, that must be the presumption. And what we're saying is... that they should not be doing that, because this is an election for the British people to decide.
So the Commission is intervening in this election to try to damage the Conservative cause and therefore to benefit the opposition parties.
Well, we're saying we don't want that to happen. It shouldn't happen. And this must be a decision for the British people.
Right, that was Jeremy Hunt's performance on the Andrew Marr show today. Again, a glaring difference between the treatment of Marr. Marr's treatment, I should say, of Hunt, as opposed and compared to his treatment of John McDonnell. Again, I don't have any sympathy with the Labour Party or its leadership, none whatsoever. Just pointing out the obvious, the blindingly obvious. This is Sunday View. Right now it's live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and TuneIn Radio as well. I'm Richie Allen, 22 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Sunday, May 7th, 2017. The French go to the polls today. Bit of a low turnout there. Macron or Le Pen, who will lead France from tomorrow onwards? Who cares, I suppose? It doesn't matter. Two faces, two masks on the same face, as my friend has said many times before. We're going to move on very swiftly. This is a serious question. And again, it's related to the European Union, political unions, economic unions. Listen to this. Reports have emerged that Dutch police are bribing journalists to ignore crime statistics that relate to asylum seekers. This isn't the first time this has happened in Europe. Now, this is massive. This is massive. You and I know we talk all the time about the agenda being to overwhelm countries with migrants, to destroy national sovereignty, and to destroy essential public services. This is the agenda. Now, it's emerging that the police in places like Holland are pressuring the media not to report on crimes committed by asylum seekers. This is an excellent bit of journalism by RT.
Reports have emerged claiming Dutch police bribed journalists to ignore crime statistics relating to asylum seekers. Let's find out more about this now and speak to our correspondent, Peter Oliver, now joining us live here on the programme. Peter, good to see you. How has this left the reputation of the Dutch police?
Well, the Dutch police force are left very red-faced, certainly following these revelations in the largest Dutch newspaper, the most red paper there, the Telegraph. What's alleged and what they've put forward is that the Telegraph issued a freedom of information request for the numbers of asylum applicants that had been caught up in crime or been involved in crime over the last few years. Well, the police force got in touch with them and offered them everything but that if they would drop their freedom of information information request. There were things like exclusive interviews with the chief executive, Eric Ackerboom, as well as other sweeteners if the newspaper would just leave this particular story alone.
I mean, the numbers must have been absolutely massive, right? If the Dutch Telegraph said to the police, we want the figures on the amount of asylum seekers or refugees arrested for committing crimes, and the police did everything they could to prevent those figures reaching the Telegraph, the numbers must be astronomical, right? I mean, they must be. And that's everything you need to know about the EU fascist dictatorship right there. I mean, I don't believe the Dutch police came up with that by themselves, by the way. That's got Brussels written all over it, doesn't it? Right. A staggering story, that, isn't it? Talk about fascism. The collusion of the state, the European Union, the Dutch state and the police to pull the wool over the eyes of the Dutch people. Again, the agenda, dilute nationalism, not dilute it, destroy it. Pit people against one another when we're fighting one another and when we're hating one another, we're not fighting them, we're not taking them on. Unbelievable. And here you see how they see that they have to do all they can to prevent people discovering the truth. So the police bribe the press to cover up asylum seeker crimes by not reporting on it. And I suppose when Dutch people ask questions, and I'm not talking about the newspapers, I'm talking about ordinary Dutch men and women like you and me, when they ask questions about it, they're racist, you're racist. Poor refugees, poor asylum seekers, God love them. What's that got to do with anything? Yes, God love them. God love the fact that the countries like Syria and Libya and Iraq and Afghanistan have been destroyed by Western intervention. Of course, God love them. But let's find out what's really going on and what the agenda is behind that. And speaking of fascism, this is incredible stuff. I got to say, RT, which has its own agenda, I'm not stupid, has put some good shifts in over the last few days, some really good shifts. Speaking of fascism, the government here, the Conservative government, wants to ban encryption in order to get unfettered access to our private communications. That this is true. Again, RT with the clip, the only news channel covering this.
A leaked document has revealed the British government's been secretly planning to effectively ban encryption so it has unfettered access to people's private communications. Polly Boyker has details.
The government wants to oblige companies to remove electronic protection from communications like WhatsApp and other internet messaging apps. This is called backdoor access, and the concern surrounding it is that it could be exploited by hackers or terrorists. Many viewers will recall that the UK's Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, complained about encryption in the wake of the Westminster terror attack in March.
There should be no place for terrorists to hide. We need to make sure that organisations like WhatsApp, and there are plenty of others like that, don't provide a secret place for terrorists to communicate with each other. We need to make sure that our intelligence services have the ability to get into situations like encrypted WhatsApp.
The plan is to force internet service providers and phone companies to hand over suspects' communications within one day of the authorities asking for them. And companies will have to be able to provide this for one in every 10,000 customers, which, according to estimates, equates to around 6,500 Brits at any one time, which is effectively a recipe for real-time mass surveillance. In order to do this, authorities will need the approval from a Secretary of State and a special judicial commissioner that would be appointed by the Prime Minister. So it would have to be sanctioned by senior government figures, and it would be in secret.
Of course it'll be in secret, and apart from one or two newspapers, it'll get scant coverage on the media or in the media here, even though it's a massive story. Again, what more proof do people need to realise they are living in a dystopian world that's getting worse by the hour? Not by the day, by the hour. This government plans to bomb Syria into oblivion while supplying and aiding the Saudi destruction of Yemen, which it's been doing now for over a year. Killing British citizens overseas, identifying a British citizen as a threat, extrajudiciously murdering them. While we support Wahhabi jihadists. While at home, forced adoption, forced vaccination, the criminalisation and the demonisation of the sick and the disabled, while at the same time public assets are privatised. State assets are sold for less than they are really worth, which is criminality on an unbelievable scale. Sold to the various subsidiary companies of the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, et al. This is our country. I could be here all day talking about it. And they just admit it. These days they just admit it. With no fear that we'll ever do anything about it. So safe are they in the knowledge, or in their knowledge, that we'll just acquiesce constantly. How do I know that? Well, on a related story, the National Security Agency in the US, the NSA, has just admitted, wait for it, recording over 151 million phone calls last year. 151 million phone calls. I hear you shouting, I can't believe it, Richie. I really can't believe that.
So an annual report from the Director of US National Intelligence has revealed the National Security Agency was authorized by a court to access the phone calls of 42 terror suspects in 2016. However, the very same report has also revealed the number of phone call records the agency traced. It's a little higher than 42, standing at a whopping 151 million. And while that figure does include multiple calls to or from the same number, it's virtually impossible that 42 suspects could have generated such vast amounts. Conversations were not necessarily recorded, but rather the so-called metadata, information on who called who and how long the conversations lasted. We discussed the revelations with the vice chair of the Libertarian National Committee, Arvind Vohra.
The number of warrantless searches of people's records is absolutely unacceptable. And what we're seeing over here is a complete ignoring of our fundamental Fourth Amendment rights. The Fourth Amendment says that in order to search somebody at all, in any way whatsoever, there needs to be a warrant issued by a judge for that specific person for some specific reason, not just everyone for no reason at all.
And we are surrounded by people, and those people are important, and they are just as valuable as us, and they are just as relevant as us. But we are surrounded by people who believe they can vote their way out of it. Imagine how far have we come? Not very far, I would say, if we believe that we can vote our way out of this madness. We've hardly evolved at all. I'm going to take another very quick break. This is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen, in association with DavidIke.com. Here's a very quick break. When we're back, we're going to talk about Facebook, and we're going to talk a little bit about Stephen Fry. I know, on a lighter note. It's Sunday, April, not even April, May 7th, 2017. Back in a minute.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. Let me give you another example of the levels of fucking criminality in this country. from these people, criminality that goes unpunished, uncharged even, uncharged. One of our listeners there, Bristol Bean, says, Richie, the way they sold the Royal Mail was one of the great robberies in plain sight ever seen. Absolutely right. But what about the sale of Eurostar by George Osborne, which when it went through in late 2015, I must have bored the absolute bejesus out of my listeners complaining about it. I never shut up about it in the naive hope that somebody would, some policeman from the fraud squad would go to number 11 Downing Street and arrest George Osborne for selling our stake in Eurostar. We had 40% of Eurostar. Right, you know what Eurostar is? Continental Railway, the Channel Tunnel, all of that. 40% of it. We sold it. Even though every expert, every man and woman who valued it said that we would be selling it for possibly £3 billion, maybe £2.5 billion, what it's actually worth. Why? Because in the next 10 to 15 years, Eurostar is opening and rolling out new routes all over the continent. And it was sold at a time when everybody, just to repeat this, who knows anything about these things, said we could get 3 billion quid for it if we were to wait a few years. Now, you can Google that. This is off the top of my head. I think we sold it for either 700 or 800 million pounds we sold it for. Despite the fact that over the next 10 years, the growth of that company was going to lead it to become worth far more than the paltry 700 or 800 million Osborne sold it for. Now, if you worked for a city firm of any description and you were in the accounting department of that firm and you were managing the assets of a firm, you would be fired with extreme prejudice and your company would recommend that you were prosecuted if you were to do that. If you were to sell something belonging to the country for less than it's worth, not because you didn't know, you were told how much it was worth now and how much it would be worth in 10 years, selling a public asset like that. And that, I'm not going to say it because I'll get into trouble, who these people really are, who George Osborne really is, who he really answers to, what he does in his spare time, and who he does it with. These people. 750 million, is it? Help me out here, I can't do the research here. 750 million, 800 million it was sold for. It's going to be worth billions in 2025. That stake, I mean, not the company. The 40% stake will be worth billions in 10 years' time. Let's move on. Let's move on. And I'm telling you, most people are not even aware of it. They're not aware of it. They're just not aware of it. What else? RT America's The Resident Programme, which I like, believes that Facebook owner Mark Zuckerberg is planning a run for office, for public office. But worse than that, the Australian newspaper has been reporting that it has internal Facebook documents which shows that Facebook has researched how to target vulnerable teens. How to target vulnerable teens who use Facebook, not to help them, but how to target them in order to manipulate them and to sell to them. This is true. Listen to this from The Resident. This is really good stuff. Really good journalism, this.
Mark Zuckerberg has begun to fulfill the personal resolution he set for himself in 2017, which is to visit and meet people in every single one of America's 50 states before the year's end. He says it's all about his mission to connect the world and give everyone a voice. But everyone in the media is talking up the talking point that Zuckerberg really wants, which is that he's gearing up to run for president. He's been posting pictures of himself talking to just gosh darn regular folk across the country, doing the whole usual political shtick of visiting plants and local places of worship and sharing family meals with people. He's also been streaming lots of videos with local politicians. So he's either considering running for office or he's testing the water to see if anyone would buy it. Either way, the thought that Zuckerberg might want to rule the world gets a little scarier to me when I hear news like this. The Australian just reported that they obtained an internal document showing how Facebook can exploit the moods and insecurities of teenagers using Facebook to help advertisers sell their crap. The document is from this year, and it explains how Facebook can figure out when kids as young as 14 feel defeated, overwhelmed, stressed, anxious, nervous, stupid, silly, useless, or like a failure. These were the actual words used in the internal document. These were the actual emotions that Facebook says it can track in kids. And the way they can do that, obviously, is by monitoring the posts made by these kids and then gathering that data into a system called sentiment analysis. And then advertisers can use this sentiment analysis to target kids at the moments when they're feeling vulnerable. So, say there's a kid who's 14 and she's feeling defeated or overwhelmed or anxious or like a failure, and she's writing these sad posts on Facebook as a misguided cry for help. Facebook's sentiment analysis can detect the moment that's happening, and then an advertiser can push an ad into her face saying, "Hey, you know what'll make you feel less anxious or like a loser? Our product. Click here to buy it now."
This is evil on a sickening level, isn't it? Isn't it really? Mark Zuckerberg. Who believes that bullshit story told in the... I can't remember the name of the film with Jesse Eisenberg. Was it The Social Network? Was it or something like that? Who believes that crap? Who believes Zuckerberg's backstory and how he came to invent this thing which 2 billion users use now? Our children are addicted to it. They're using it on mobile phones, tablets and laptops. 2 billion. And of course, the devices they're using Facebook on, they all have cameras. Think about that for a minute as well. Who believes that Zuckerberg story about how he came to create Facebook? I don't believe it. Not for a minute. We're going to finish up today. It's 3 minutes to the top of the hour, by the way. It's Sunday View with me, Richie Allen, on davidicke.com. By the way, before we do finish up, Karen in Glasgow has done the research for me and said £757 million Osborne sold the British 40% stake in Eurostar for. He should be in prison. 4 or 5 years in jail for that. That's corruption on an unimaginable scale. Again, so fucking pisses me off that, you know, to get away with that. Going to finish with something a bit more light for a Sunday. Don't know whether you know this or not, but it's been reported a lot over the last 2 days. The Irish police, the Garda Síochána, are investigating Stephen Fry for blasphemy after he unloaded on God in an interview on Irish television broadcast in February 2015 with Gay Byrne, one of Ireland's most famous television presenter and broadcaster. So in an interview, I think Gay Byrne did a series of programmes meeting people to talk about their faith, famous people. Fry was on there and he unloaded on God when Gay Byrne asked him a question. Apparently, an anonymous man said it was his civic duty to report the comments which he alleges were in breach of the Defamation Act. And in Irish law, it is still a crime. Blasphemy is still a crime. Right. This is the clip. This is what Stephen Fry had to say about Holy Jesus.
Suppose what Oscar believed in as he died, in spite of your protestations, suppose it's all true, and you walk up to the pearly gates and you are confronted by God. What will Stephen Fry say to him, her, or it?
I will basically, what's known as theodicy, I think, I'll say, bone cancer in children? What's that about? How dare you? How dare you create a world in which there is such misery that is not our fault? It's not right. It's utterly, utterly evil. Why should I respect a capricious, mean-minded, stupid God who creates a world which is so full of injustice and pain? That's what I'd say.
And you think you're going to get in
no,
on that?
But I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to get in on his terms.
Blasphemy! He said it again. He should be stoned to death. It's an interesting one, that. I don't think that'll get any further than some newspaper articles. The Irish police are very unlikely to bring charges against anybody for making any comments about the mysterious being in the sky whose father and son are one and the same and all of that jazz. Check out The Perception Deception by David Icke. Nearly 1,000 pages long. Fantastic chapters in there about religious beliefs and where they came from and all of that. Listen, that's it for Sunday View. Thanks to everybody who listened. Thanks to you for listening. Thank you so much for putting up with it, putting up with me and the programme. I love you for it. I'll be back with you live tomorrow Monday at 7 p.m. BST. That's 7 p.m. tomorrow Monday. Until then, if you can, go to richieallen.co.uk. The link's on there to donate to this programme if you can. Or go to paypal.me/richieallen. Make a donation if you can. Help keep this show on the road. Lovely to chat with you. Until tomorrow then, have a lovely Sunday. I'm off to take some more tablets for my stomach, which is giving me all sorts of problems. Until tomorrow, bye for now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye-bye.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.